Three times a week, the Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast brings you the latest from technology, music, and the very best analysis of the games. Plus, they've got a community of friends, including Dominic Foxworth for Foxworth Fridays. That's the Right Time with Bomani Jones, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And Monday and Wednesday are also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Monday afternoon. Joining me from Los Angeles, California, where he's rarely been this season because he's been on Nets duty and Warriors duty on and off, but he's home right now. Om Yongmasuk, how's it going? Well,
only home for a few more hours, and then I fly out to Golden State tonight for a couple games. They play the Pistons, and then they play the Pacers.
And you got some coffee too. What is your drink of choice?
I see. I am a diehard coffee bean and tea leaf guy. I will not go to Starbucks. I'm all about coffee bean. So they have coffee bean out here in the West Coast a little bit. They have some in, I think, Arizona. I am surprised they don't have many in San Francisco. So I was a little surprised by that. But yeah, that's my iced caramel coffee.
Yeah, they have them. They have them in LAX. As a matter of fact, I was just there when I saw it there. Joining us from Naples, Florida, where I asked Bobby how he was doing yesterday, Om, and he sent me a photograph that he took out of his front of his house, where there was a tornado visible from his yard. So, Bobby Marks, our front office insider, I got to ask you, everything okay down there in Naples?
Just a little chilly today. You know, I'm a true Floridian. You know, whenever it drops below 70, I have sweatpants and a sweatshirt on. So, but yeah, we had a rare tornado in our literally our backyard yesterday. And there's no basements in Florida. So you're not hiding in the basement. You're just, I saw my neighbor yesterday. We're walking our dogs and they said we had the dogs in a closet and that's where we were. And, but yeah, we're safe. We're safe down here.
All right. That was, I didn't know my emotions seeing that photo were interesting. I was like, well, it's an interesting photo because it's a photo of a funnel cloud. But one wonders if you can see a funnel cloud, whether you should be taking a photo of it or hiding from it. But hey, listen, you're safe. Bobby, you've got a new project that I actually legitimately, I'm not even just saying it, can't wait for. Can you tell us a little bit about it before we get going here?
Yeah. So we have a show called The Front Office, and we recorded episode one, which is with Kobe Altman, the now president of basketball operations with the Cleveland Cavaliers.
For and one week he's been president.
I know. And he's my first guest on our show. And I when I talked about it on the first episode, it's not out yet, but you know, one of the things I do, Brian and Om knows this, is I help draft prospects prepare for their interviews. And basically we're kind of flipping the script a little bit here, where I'm asking the type of draft question, the questions that draft prospects get to front office executives. And it's less about why did you pick this player or why did you make this trade, but really kind of diving into that GM's personality a little bit, and the people who are behind the scenes. It brings out a different perspective of Kobe that maybe a lot of people don't know about him. And hopefully that's going to be out soon. And we're going to put one of these out every week. And yeah, that's our new project there.
All right. Well, it's on ESPN. It's going to be on ESPN's NBA YouTube channel, and then keep an eye on your social media feeds for letting you know what's coming.
Yep, that's where I'll be.
We just talked about LAX. Did you know that Kobe Altman met his wife in line at a food vendor at LAX?
No way.
Yep.
Really?
He was flying. He was on a scouting mission or something. And he was coming back to flight to Cleveland. And he was flirting with this woman in line. You know, he probably had Cavs gear on, Bobby. You know, what do you do? Oh, I'm assistant director of regional scouting. Cleveland Cavaliers, whatever his job was a long time ago.
Oh yeah, I think it was like personnel scout, right? Like that.
Yeah,
was
yeah, yeah. He had like a low level front office job, but he had gear, Kobe or Bobby, because you know that one thing you have, you know, it was we work for a team. Some guys get paid a lot, some guys get paid nothing, but everybody has gear. And he had his gear on.
We all do. I mean, and that's why, like, it's the funny story is when I got let go by the Nets, like, I had no clothes. Like, I had to put all my clothes. I'm not wearing Nets gear around the house. I had to bag up all my clothes. I gave it to Goodwill. And I had to literally go out to store and buy a Nike and Adidas and generic polos.
Right. We had Steve Clifford on the podcast. Zach Lowe and I did after the finals. And, you know, he's breaking down, you know, game one for us and everything. We could see him. It wasn't visual at the time, but we could see him. And he was wearing Magic gear. Why wouldn't he have been fired by the Magic? But, I mean, that's what his gear is. You know, so I mean, you know, he's not out in public. Why throw it away?
Wait, I need to know, Wendy, real quick, before we leave the Kobe. Did Kobe at least buy his future wife whatever she was ordering in line?
Good question. You know, good question. I don't know, and I don't even know if she was from Cleveland. She might have been.
I'm assuming this is probably the United terminal, since he was flying back and forth from Cleveland.
Yes, I believe it was a United flight. I'm sure he remembers all of those things, but, yes,
what a great story.
He's bought her quite a few meals since then. he just got a contract extension. He'd probably be buying her something else nice here pretty soon. Okay. So, we do talk about the NBA on here. I promise we'll get to that. So we had an eventful weekend in the NBA, not necessarily in a good way, a couple injuries, and the big one, Kevin Durant. I think you have to look at the bright side with this. I have seen this type of injury happen in the NBA a handful of times over the last 10 years or so, where a guy falls backwards into another player. And it's a lot of times it seems like it's a teammate. It seems like a common friendly fire injury. And Durant, this is the second time it's happened to Durant in 5 years, 4 or 5 years, had a similar injury when he was playing for the Warriors. And at that time, I remember that's, you know, he hasn't spoken about this injury yet. But that time I remember the initial diagnosis, they thought he might be done for the year. And then they got an MRI, if I'm not mistaken, this, and they said, okay, it's only partially torn and you can come back. And he did come back and they won the title. So Durant suffers a sprained MCL again. I am not an orthopedist, but I do know from covering knee injuries over the years that if you're going to sustain an injury to your knee, you want it to be the MCL, because the MCL gets more blood flow than the ACL or the other ligaments. And so if you have a partially torn MCL, which it sounds like what this is, I don't know for sure, but it sounds like it, it heals much faster because there's more blood flow. So this is a blow to the Nets. But Woj is telling us they're expecting 4 to 6 weeks, which is what you think of from like a first and a half degree sprain. So, you know, the Nets have not been playing great, but at least I guess they avoided disaster here.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Durant was the one thing in a season full of disruptions that the Nets could count on. I mean, he was obviously having an MVP season. He was leading the league in scoring. I believe the last guy to average, I think something like KD was averaging 29-9-5 or 29-7-5, I believe, something like that. And I think the last guy to average that was Giannis, and he won MVP that season. So if there are silver linings in this for the Nets, I would probably say this allows Kyrie and Harden to, I guess, develop a little more chemistry together, because 11 starting on Monday, 11 of the next 14 games for the Nets are on the road. So Kyrie will be playing.
That's an important thing to point out. So actually they are playing right now.
Yeah.
As we're recording this pod, they're playing the Cavs in Cleveland right now. So next 14 games, which is roughly 3 weeks,
3 weeks,
4 and 3.5 weeks, 11 of those 14 will be with Kyrie in theory.
That softens the blow a little bit. And last season, the Nets were 16-3 in games that Harden and Kyrie played without Durant. So you know that they can win without him. But when they go to the home games and they don't have Kyrie, and this has been the thing about the Nets, they were just starting to kind of maybe I don't even know if you can say get used to this weird situation of having two different teams, one on the road and one at home, but perhaps they were starting to maybe get into a little bit of a flow for that. And now it's totally disrupted again. The other silver lining, obviously, other than Kevin being able to recover from this and having time, and maybe the rest will do his body even better because he was playing heavy minutes, is that maybe the Nets will get a little bit of a lower seed here. And if this continues into the playoffs where Kyrie can only play in road games, this would technically, theoretically benefit the Nets, because then you would have a potential game 7 on the road and you would have Kyrie.
That's a crazy thing to say, Bobby, but like it is in this crazy scenario, I guess technically almost making a point.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is as much parity, right? In this, probably in the league in general, where you can make an argument that 10 teams could probably win it. I mean, the East is so wide open. If you know, what's the difference if you're the 4 seed or if you're the 1 seed here, especially if you're going to, you know, start, you know, if you do second round is you're on the road and you have Kyrie, and we'll see what happens when we get to the spring. I think the interesting thing where Brooklyn is, especially with Kyrie and Harden together, is like, we haven't gotten anything from Paul Millsap, right? I mean, he's been out personal reasons. It hasn't played much. Blake, kind of a shell of himself. Aldridge was good, and then he's been injured of late. Claxton's been out. James Johnson's been in and out. And it's like, I think you'd have a little more comfort level from your bigs if, you know, two of those guys are going to kind of step in. I mean, they've gotten great production from De'Ron Sharp, who's been tremendous, you know, the last couple of weeks here. And I think what it's setting up with, and why I'm bringing it up, is that Brooklyn's going to have an interesting decision with one of these veterans here, whether it be Blake or Paul Millsap, because two-way players are not eligible to play in the playoffs. And you're looking at guys like Kessler Edwards, who has started before, has played well. David Duke has started, has played well. And I know they're going to want to find a role for them on their 15-man roster. So who's going to be the odd man out here, right? Is it going to be Millsap? Is it going to be Blake to kind of create a roster spot for one of these two players?
So let me say this to you, Bobby. You mentioned De'Ron Sharp. So there's been some chatter through a couple of teams that I talked to that the Nets have dipped into their toe into the trade market for Nick Claxton. In other words, maybe thinking about trading him. Now, this, when I say this, and I know that I'll get aggregated for saying it, but I know this would surprise some people because they would say this guy is really valuable defensively. He's very active. He's been out recently with a hamstring injury. But he's a free agent. And Bobby, how much over the luxury tax are they?
A lot. I mean, a
like
lot.
It's like, yeah, it's, I mean, like it's $100 million,
and it's only going to go up. I mean, we'll see what happens with Harden and Kyrie, certainly with their numbers. It's only going up. So yeah, he's a restricted free agent, and as I said, like, you can't pay everyone, right? Like,
so if they think that Sharp, who's a rookie from North Carolina, if they think Sharp can be effective in that role at center, I think there's a possibility that they could look at doing something with Nick Claxton before the deadline, which maybe can address what they've got right now, because they don't want to lose him for nothing. Or maybe they would look to get a pick, because they may do that. But that's one thing to watch, I think, for sure. The other thing I would say I'm not saying they're sure going to do it, but I heard from two different teams independently that there was some just feeling out of the market there. The other thing is that I just read a story that Ohm wrote November 29th, that Joe Harris had undergone left ankle surgery. And I believe Ohm's story said that he was out 48 weeks. Well, it's not going to be 4 weeks. We're already at 7 weeks. I do believe he is traveling with the team on this trip, so he may be getting closer. But, you know, that is already dragging. That has already gone to the back end of that recovery timeline, which I guess is worrisome. But on the other hand, I guess they're hoping to get him back soon, Ohm. So getting him back would be helpful as well. Not that you can replace Kevin Durant, but, you know, the Nets are in need of that outside shooting, quite frankly, to stretch the floor a little bit for Harris to get back.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Harris' return would be huge for them so that he could at least spread the floor. Because with Kevin Durant, I mean, yes, a lot of his game is in the mid-range, but you had to respect every second Kevin Durant was on the court. So he would obviously help and maybe benefit from Kyrie Irving as well, because now, you know, when Joe Harris was with the team, they didn't have somebody who could really, outside of Harden, create by driving and kicking and things like that. So Joe Harris would benefit. But I think recently, you know, his rehab is taking longer than expected for the Nets, and I think they want to be closer to that. I will say this about Nick Claxton. The thing they like about Nick Claxton is that he's an athletic center who, right. You know, at first they were like, oh, Harden could have a lob guy inside in Nick Claxton. Then Claxton gets hurt. He comes back. Kyrie and Claxton and Harden look like they start to find him, and they're starting to develop a little chemistry there. Daron Sharpe is a really good rebounder. I'm not quite sure if he's going to be the same type of lob type of element for them, but I certainly understand the predicament the Nets are in. I think you're right. You've got these veteran power forwards and Blake Griffin and Paul Millsap who, you know, at various times this season have kind of looked like, you know, they are well past their prime. Blake started to have a little bit, like he started to look a little bit more spry and fresh after they weren't using him for a long stretch. So I think he's probably the bigger candidate to contribute than Millsap. But yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting if they were to move Claxton, you know, that does that take away whoever they would get back? I still think the Nets need to get more athletic.
You know, what's interesting, guys, too, is that when Brooklyn sent out the press release on Durant, that there was no timeline, right? And I wonder if that's going to be the kind of the thing going forward where you put, you know, hey, you put it. And I don't know, Om, was there a timeline when they did the Joe Harris press release?
The initial press was, I believe there was. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I wonder if that's a reason why there's no time, like now, because, hey, we get to Brooklyn says 4 to 6 weeks on Kevin Durant, and we're at week six and we're like, well, what the heck's going on right now? I wonder if that's going to be the thing now. It's like the hockey approach, right? Mm-hmm. Like upper body injury.
Well, it's funny because I think the trend we've seen is that teams tend to say, we'll be reevaluated in like, you know, 4 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever. And reevaluated almost just kind of means nothing. You know what I mean? Like with that just means we're going to give you another update in like 8 weeks of basically like, oh, we're going to give you another update then of that he's out for a little bit longer or something like that, you know?
Well, he did have a similar injury a few years ago and it was 4 to 6 weeks then. So yeah. I think we might've jumped to that conclusion even if they didn't say it. I'm referring to Bobby Marks' trade guide, which went onto ESPN.com last week. And if you have some time, you should look at this because you will impress your friends with all the stuff that's in the trade guide. The Nets are 100 and their current tax projection is $110 million, just tax. So as they make decisions in the coming days here, keep in mind that it's $110 million that they're paying in tax.
Yeah. I mean, I put an example in there, they've got these trade exceptions, right? They, from the Dinwiddie 11.3, I think. And like, if you go out and get a player that's making $6 million, it's going to cost you another $45, $50 million in luxury tax penalty. And I've been there 2014. I still got the trophy for the largest tax bill which is peanuts now. I think it was $98 million back then. Like, I think the Clippers are at like 94 and they're third highest. So
that's right.
I know these guys owners have a lot, billions. But when you say on August 3rd, the NBA sends you wiring instructions and said you got to wire 100 and whatever, 40 million, it still hurts a little bit there.
They want it all at one time, huh?
Oh,
they want it all at one time.
This is not college. We are not paying for college here. It's all one time.
What is that like, Bobby, when you go and ask the owner to cut a check for that much?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, just going back to that 2014 season, I've said it before, you know, we had an opportunity to get Jordan Hill in a trade at the deadline. It was going to cost us an extra $40 million. Prokhorov signed off on it. And really, we asked, you know, Jason Kidd was our coach. And we said to Jason, if we get him, will you play him? Like, you can't get him. And then just all of a sudden, he's like your 10th man. And Jason said, you know what? I don't know how he was going to fit in the rotation. And we didn't do the deal because come on. You know, it's like another toy to the toy box. It's like you spend $40 million on a guy who's going to play five minutes. 5 minutes. It just doesn't make sense.
I miss Prokhorov so much. I can only imagine some of the stuff that you got to witness, but just the few times I was around him, I cherished them. he did have a very, he was always kind of smiling, but I don't know how you felt about Bobby, but it made me uneasy, even though he wasn't my boss, even though he was smiling. But I'll never forget, I was there the night that the day that Avery Johnson got fired. Yeah. And somebody asked him when he made this was like maybe a Tuesday. I just don't
know. Right around Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. It was maybe like a Tuesday. And somebody just asked sort of a throwaway question. They said, when did you decide that you wanted to fire Avery? And he goes, Saturday. And we sat there for a second, and they were like, well, Saturday, why did you wait 3 days? And he goes, well, I was in the Canadian Rockies and the fresh powder was up to here. And he like held his hand up like to his shoulder, which was, 6.5 feet off the ground. And he's like, he basically was like, I decided I wanted to fire him a few days ago, but the snow was so good in Banff or wherever he was heli skiing. That he's like, yeah, I'll let him have the job for a few more days. And I mean, it's not really, it's funny now. I mean, I felt bad for Avery. Avery is an acquaintance. I like him a lot, but that's a funny story. But at the same time, when you have an oligarch, who can off with your head at any time, it's still disconcerting. But
you remember Wendy, the famous Prokhorov quote, and B Marks definitely can remember this.
Carmelo.
I rewound it like 6 times and kept watching it because I couldn't stop laughing.
Well, remember there was the one where Jason Kidd was returning and Prokhorov was talking about it for the first time. And he said, and I won't do it in a bad Russian accent, but he said, there's an old English proverb. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you.
Yes, there was a few like words missing, which made it all the more terrifying. But I just remember, and I will do a bad Russian accent. There was going to be the meeting with Carmelo Anthony, where they were going to try to talk Carmelo. You guys were going to try to talk Carmelo into saying, I will go to the Nets, not the Knicks.
That's right.
I'm sorry if this is PTSD, Bobby.
No, sorry. And it's one of the few times when you were like, you're not really allowed to talk to players, and Denver had given us permission to talk to Carmelo, which is totally rare. I'll tell you one thing with Prokhorov and Dmitry Razumov, the one thing they did like, the trade machine. They love that ESPN. We would come because of the time difference. We would come in at like 8 a.m. and Billy King would have like printouts of like proposals on the ESPN trade machine. Oh man.
So it's the middle of a press conference. I can't remember. I think he just called this press conference just to say this basically. And there was supposed to be this meeting that Carmelo was going to have.
It was in DC.
Okay. The meeting was supposed to be in DC.
Yep.
Or was the press conference in DC? I can't.
The meeting was in DC. The press conference was in Newark at the Prudential Center.
Right. But the meeting never happened because I don't remember why he got pissed off, but Prokhorov just says the meeting with Carmelo is hereby canceled. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that's when they found out it was canceled. Because like it was in fact hereby canceled.
And I remember walking out of the meeting with Billy King, and Prokhorov was in front of us, and I said to Billy, I'm like, are we really out of this? Out of the Carmelo? He goes, no.
Oh my gosh. Oh man, there's some stories that I heard about Prokhorov that I can't tell, and I can only.
I can't say. Hey, I signed a non-disclosure.
All right, good. Yes, they have their own ways of doing non-disclosure in Mother Russia. All right, so it's a setback for the Nets. But, hopefully, he's back. I mean, one thing about Durant, he's had a handful of serious injuries in his career. He had the Jones fracture. He had the Achilles. He's had a couple of knee things. But he always comes back awesome. Mm-hmm. He comes back from injuries like no one I've ever seen. And so, like, if you're, I feel bad he got hurt, but maybe this is foolish. I expect him to be totally fine by like March. And to avoid that major injury on a free play like that, I think that, it'll be hard for the Nets in the short term. But another injury that came out this weekend that really made me stop short, and I don't know what to make of it yet. The Warriors announcing this injury with Draymond Green. So the day that Klay Thompson returned a week and plus ago was Sunday. Draymond was warming up, getting ready for that game. That was a really exciting game against the Cavs, a Sunday afternoon evening. You were there, right, Al?
Yeah, I was.
And what did they say that night?
That night they had said that, and it would happen like maybe not even 2 minutes before they were going to announce the starting lineup, that Draymond was out due to a calf injury that he had tweaked in the pregame warmup, and that basically he was going to start and go through the starting lineup and be on the court because it was Klay's return and he wanted to honor that. And so we saw him on the court. We saw him in the starting lineup, and then he fouls. He gives a foul right away and then comes out. So we were thinking, okay, it's just a tweak, and that he wouldn't be on the road trip, at least for the first couple games, but could join them. But then all of a sudden he wasn't on the entire road trip.
So was there any reports or anything that you knew of that Draymond was having issues with his back before that?
No. So he had just come back out of health and safety protocols. And he was in a really, really good mood because he was excited that Klay was coming back, to the point where the day before Klay returned, there was a practice and they had a scrimmage. And Draymond had told Mark Spears that he couldn't sleep the night before. And he felt like almost like currents of electricity were jolting through his body because he was so excited that he was finally going to get back on the floor with Klay just in the scrimmage. Because when Klay scrimmaged with the team in Denver, when the Warriors had their game postponed due to COVID, they were stuck in Denver. So they decided to have a scrimmage. Draymond wasn't there. So Klay scrimmaged with the rest of the team. So this was going to be Draymond's first time back on the floor again with Klay. So he was so excited. So we didn't see, there was no hint of anything kind of really nagging him, because I saw him at shoot around, I think the game before that. And the guy was like, you know, he was basically almost ready to just sprint off the floor. He was in such a good mood. And then he stopped and talked to everybody because he had just gotten out of protocol. So he was happy to see everybody.
Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. So here's the thing. The Warriors announced that the calf injury was related to a disc issue in his back. Now, I am definitely not a neurologist, but Bobby, that doesn't sound good. And the other thing that they said was that he had an MRI on his back that night, the night he hurt his calf. So they knew to go to the back. So that makes me wonder what's going on. And Steve Kerr, a man whose life was derailed by a back injury, I'd like to point out, I'm sure he never talks about back injuries without having a shiver down that spine, said, you know, this is just out of precaution. He's going to have physical therapy for a few weeks. But this concerns me, Bobby, especially because we have seen that since Draymond has been out, the Warriors have not been anywhere near the same defensively. What the Milwaukee Bucks did to the Warriors, and granted, it was just one game in January, I'm not going to overreact to it, but like the whippings that they took that night, I mean, that was very worrisome. And this is a back issue, a disc issue. Bobby, this is something I really think it's important to monitor.
Yeah, I mean they're 1-3 as of Monday in the games he's out, and they're giving up close to 120 points, right? And I'm looking through his injury history right now. I mean, he's missed only one game in his career because of a back, which was in 2020. You know, the calf. This is a new one. You know, this is a new injury as far as for the calf. And it's almost like, I mean, although they haven't been in the playoffs the last couple of years, like, I mean, there's a lot of wear and tear. There's a lot of miles there, you know, like it's, and that's when you have a calf and the back is concerning. That, I mean, that's the big thing as far as where that's, because that can linger for a long time here.
Well, again, I'm not a doctor, but if there's something hurting in his calf related to an injury in his back, that sounds like a nerve thing. So that's worrisome. You know, they have a very favorable schedule coming up here. They have a long homestand starting
7 games.
Yeah. Is it 7 games?
Yeah.
Starting Tuesday. And then they play on the road, but the road games are at Houston and at San Antonio. And then they play. I mean, listen to their schedule. Listen to their schedule. Home against Detroit, Indiana, Houston, Utah. Okay, there's a tough one. Dallas, semi-tough. Minnesota, Nets. Okay. Then at Houston, at San Antonio, then SAC, then at Oklahoma City. That's a stretch where I could see them feasting. So I'm not like worried about where they're going to get, because they are now 3 games behind the Suns and the standings. Okay, whatever. I'm just more worried about Draymond. They need Draymond, like as much firepower as they have. Draymond's their linchpin, always has been. And
well Wendy, it's not just the defense. I mean, they're until they scored 138 against the Bulls or something like that, their offense have been struggling. There was a stretch where they were like, you know, they lost at Dallas, they scored 82 points. They lost at New Orleans without Steph that night and without Draymond, they scored 96. But this is not the Warriors offense that we were used to seeing earlier in the season. These last maybe like, you know, 5 games or so, you know, defenses have really been locking in on Steph, and they just, Draymond obviously is the guy that frees them all up with all those screens. He does so much for that team. Clay even said it. Clay said, I can't wait to play with him because he does so many things for me to free me up. So it just impacts him on both sides of the floor.
Yeah, so that's definitely something to keep a close eye on. The other thing is that Miles Turner. Now, there may be an update before we have this podcast post. I'm a little bit behind here, but Miles Turner seeking multiple opinions on a foot injury. The team is in LA and he's with the team, and so he was seeing a second opinion. This kind of came, at least as far as I know, out of nowhere. But the reason that's interesting is that Miles Turner is one of the bigger names in the trade market, Bobby. There's like a handful of teams that are interested in trading for him. And so in addition to the Pacers outlook, there's a bunch of teams out there who maybe have made offers or are thinking of making offers for Miles Turner who are waiting to hear on those results in the next day or two.
Guy, he missed 18 games last year for a right foot, right? So bigs and feet are, you know, kind of a little bit of a warning sign there. And yeah, I mean, we've seen it in Indiana's games of late when him and Sabonis are playing. They've almost, it feels like almost like Rick Carlisle has almost like staggered their minutes a little bit where they're not playing with each other as much. And I think if you look at where Indiana is, and they're not going to probably make the play-in, is that if you had a pecking order as far as trade candidates, who's going to be gone, it would have been, you know, before this injury, Turner, LeVert, and then probably on the outside would be Sabonis here. And now we'll see what happens with this foot. And if there's anything lingering here, then yeah, I'm not, if I'm a team interested in him, I know he's got another year left on his contract, but I'm not at least offering anything of true value.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Not only if you're trading for Turner, so I don't know if I'm going to say what I've heard, but I've kind of been surprised what I'm just going to stop right there. But Turner is obviously a guy who's extension eligible, Bobby. So yeah. if he goes to a place that, especially they give up something and he's like going to be their center of the short term future, I would think he'd be looking for an extension. So that when you trade for a guy like this, you're figuring on you're going to pay him. I would think so that, you know, that is a factor in all this as well. And, you know, not that it's, you know, obviously you don't want the guy to be hurt, but not that it's going to affect the Pacers, but it may affect the team that was interested in going for him. So that's a big report too. We're waiting on hearing lots of stuff sort of bubbled up over the weekend. It was very disconcerting, I felt. We're waiting on another injury situation that I think could have significant consequences. And that's Paul George. So it's another story that you wrote about an injured player. He has a torn UCL in his elbow. Is his right elbow or his left elbow?
It's his shooting elbow.
Shooting elbow, right yeah. elbow. This is the injury, if I'm not mistaken. I keep sounding like a doctor. I'm not at all. This is the injury that when a baseball pitcher has it, he has Tommy John surgery, where they go get a ligament from like your leg and bring it up. Paul George isn't going to be throwing any pitches anytime soon, so he isn't going to need Tommy John surgery, I don't think. Well, maybe he will. I don't know. So, what do we know about where Paul George is? And after you give us the update, let's talk about what the Clippers are looking at here.
So Paul George, when the injury news was revealed on Christmas Day, the Clippers said they would give it a 3 to 4 week period to heal before it's reevaluated again. So this past weekend that we just went through was 3 weeks. And this morning I asked Ty Lue, you know, is there any update on Paul George? And he said, not one that we're ready to give. So that's not encouraging.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah. PG, I think what the Clippers were looking at is he had an elbow issue early in the season. He was out for about 2 to 3 weeks and felt good and then came back. And then they played him in a couple games. I think it got banged or whatever, but there was a game at Portland where basically he came out of it and started feeling a little pain. And so they checked it up again. And that's when they found this injury. And so their thing is, let's let it heal and see how much it heals over basically a month before we determine the next course of action, which could be potentially surgery. And so the hope is that
surgery
it's going
would be
to
be season ending.
Yeah, I would think so, especially at this point. And especially with where the Clippers are, this obviously dramatically changed their outlook on the season. Before he got hurt, they were looking at, hey, we're going to make the playoffs, hope that Kawhi comes back. Kawhi is still rehabbing. And, you know, by all indications, many people have thought he's ahead of schedule. But if Paul George now does not come back this season, if the Clippers fall out of the playoff race, I believe entering today, they were just outside the eighth spot, hanging about two games.
As we speak right now, they are playing later tonight in Denver. But as we speak right now, well, pretty much the whole league is playing. So you're going to have to forgive us on not being up to date. God knows what will happen in tonight's games. It'll make us everything we're saying obsolete, but that's life.
Yeah.
They are in ninth place, but they're 3 games ahead of 10th place Portland and 4 ahead of 11th place Sac. So they're in play-in position right now. I mean, they're in okay position, but
they play Indiana today. They're playing the Pacers at home. They play Denver on Wednesday.
You are right. I apologize to you from the bottom of my heart.
No, it's okay. But listen, I think with Ty Lue, what we've seen and known is that he gets the most out of whatever he has. So I fully expect the Clippers to hang around in the playoff race so that if Paul George, if there is a chance he can come back this season, he would. And then that obviously would bolster the chances of a possible return from Kawhi later on as well.
Bobby, this is why I'm bringing this up.
I know why.
They need to hang around, Bobby. Because they don't have their draft pick.
Yep.
And this is, so we don't know with Kawhi. Chris Haynes on TNT last week, I believe, said that Kawhi was ahead of schedule. But I mean, maybe that's true. I respect Chris, but the schedule exists. The schedule is Kawhi's schedule. I mean, you talk to people at the Clippers, and they say, we are encouraged. We see him working. We're happy about his progress. It is Kawhi's schedule. I don't know what's going to happen there, but their pick goes to Oklahoma City unprotected, and it's not a swap year. you know, they have the picks, and then every other year, then the Thunder can swap. So it's one thing if you end up, if the Thunder end up with the, let's say you get lucky, quote unquote, lucky in the lottery, and you get to fourth. If you're the Clippers, let's say you miss the playoffs and you get to fourth, and the Thunder, like last year, are like in sixth. Okay. You lose the fourth pick, but you're swapping with the Thunder, who are going to have a high pick. But this year, it's not a swap. They get the pick straight away. And so the Clippers need, you know, even if Paul George and Kawhi are done for the year, the Clippers got to go for it. Right, Bobby? I mean, this is the reality of the Kawhi trade.
Yeah, you're not playing for draft position. And I remember when in 2019, that July morning when all, you know, when they agreed to the Paul George trade and Kawhi was coming. And I remember having a conversation with, you know, Lawrence Frank, who's their president. And we were joking because he said, well, we gave more in the Oklahoma City deal because more than what you guys gave in the Pierce Garnett deal in 2014. And we were laughing and I said, well, yeah, you have Paul George and Kawhi. We had an older Garnett and Pierce and Jason Terry. Yeah. Jason Terry. So there was assurance that, hey, you have two bona fide all NBA players. And I think it just shows you how things can change, right? I mean, things can change awfully quick where you think those two players are going to be there and that you're not worried about giving up a lottery pick because of, even though Kawhi was going to potentially be a free agent. Now the chances are because you've got Kawhi out, you got Paul out. I don't know when we'll see Kawhi. What is he about 6 months out from having that ACL surgery?
That was in the second round last year.
Yeah. So I think I think they'll hang around to that like 9-10 area just because like I don't trust any of those Sacramento, New Orleans, San Antonio, like that group there to make that jump into the 10. But like you lose in the lottery. I mean, you lose in the play-in. Then you go into the lottery, and who the heck knows if you're sitting at 9 or 10 going into the, into the lottery. Like, can you imagine if that's the way that Oklahoma City gets the number one, that number one pick they've been waiting for a long time?
Could you just believe that would be such the Clippers' luck that the year that they win the lottery, you know, they don't have their own pick. You know, if they had their own pick and they win the lottery, it would probably be some Oluwa Candy type of a dude who would be there for them. But like, you know, then they would lose it to Oklahoma City. I mean, that would be amazing. Look, when this injury happened, I remember talking to someone in the Clippers who said that this doesn't make us sellers right now because the core group that we have right now around this team is still what we want around the team next season when we have Kawhi and PG fully healthy and we're still going for it. So, I mean, could they end up trying to trade a Serge Ibaka at the trade deadline or maybe even a Marcus Morris if a good deal comes along? Yeah, I think they're going to listen for sure. But I think that the young guys that they have, like the Terrence Manns of the world, they want to see develop a little bit more. And they want to, I think what I got was when Paul George went down was that they were not going to be, you know, we're selling everybody at the trade deadline.
Well, they can't sell. I mean, they can sell, I guess, but it doesn't help them.
Yeah.
I mean, although, again, let me refer to my Bobby Marks trade guide. The Clippers are $32 million over the tax and over the line and expected to pay a $94 million tax bill. Bobby is suggesting that no matter what, that the Clippers trade Serge Ibaka, who makes $9.3 million this year, they trade him to the Thunder, who are $20 million below the floor, to just ease that tax burden. I mean, the guy's worth like $80 billion, the owner, but you know, it's another $30 or $40 million. But like, I don't think selling is even. It doesn't even behoove you, I think, Bobby. Any deal you're making is to help you for next year, probably.
Yeah, well, then that's the thing too, because eventually, like. As almost saying, like, you know, maybe there's a Marcus Morris trade. Like, eventually, Paul and Kawhi are going to be coming back, right? So you need to have the Luke Kennards of the world, and you need to have, like, I know that it's one thing to have your young players develop, which is great, but you still need to have the Reggie Jacksons. We'll see what happens with Bledsoe. He's got a partial guarantee this offseason. You still need to have a good group of core guys. So Steve Ballmer's worth a lot of money, right? A ton of money. So what's 40 million to him? If it, as far as to save towards the luxury tax, he might say, you know what? I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable where we are at paying $94 million in the tax. We'll roll with this. If it's not going to, you know, I don't want to trade second round picks. Like I'm not in the position to trade second round picks to save, you know, $30 to $40 million.
I'll never forget Ramona Shelburne. She did that great 30 for 30 podcast episode, the Sterling tapes. And she was talking about in there about the meeting that Ballmer had with Donald Sterling, even though Donald's wife, Shelley, negotiated the sale. I love the negotiation. The negotiation, I can't remember what he offered. I think he offered like 1.7. Like this is like literally how it went. He was on the phone with her and he goes, how about 1.7? She goes, no, 2. And he goes, okay, 2. Like he raised his offer $300 million in like a minute. But then they actually had to have a meeting between Donald Sterling and Ballmer, and Sterling says to him, according to Ramona, I mean, Shelley Sterling sat for an interview. So I like Ramona's accuracy here. Donald Sterling goes to Steve Ballmer. Do you really have $2 billion in cash? Cause he was writing him a check. He gave him 2 billion, personal. I'm sure it was a wire transfer, but. And Steve was like, yeah, I got it. And it blew Sterling's mind that somebody would have $2 billion because Sterling was a guy who always bought stuff. He never had cash. He always bought more buildings. But I just love that. You really have $2 billion? Yeah, I got it. Here it is right here. So I guess when you're talking about somebody like that, and by the way, he's like his net worth has like tripled since then. So I guess when you're talking to somebody who's dealing with that, you know, it changes your viewpoint. But still, $40 million is $40 million. But the Clippers are in a precarious position. And I'm sure the Thunder fans have already been watching very closely, but I can only imagine when that report came out, I think it was from the Bleacher Report, Jake Fisher, who said that, you know, Paul George might be truly done for the year. I could only imagine the reaction that drew in the Oklahoma City front office. So, before we go here, Bobby, as I read through your trade guide, which again, it was thousands and thousands of words long, but like, absolutely 100% makes you smarter. And I'm going to be talking about it for the next 3 weeks. And it's all available for you to read. You can sound smart. Several places in there, you were talking about the feasibility and possibility of a Jeremy Grant trade. The reason Jeremy Grant's interesting is that not only because he's one of the potentially most talented players available in the market, but because teams that are contenders are interested in him. I think it's maybe a similar situation to last year when the Magic traded Aaron Gordon to the Nuggets. That was a trade that potentially could have changed the balance of power where a very good contending team gets a versatile defender. So let me ask you this before we talk about what it might look like for his market. Should the Pistons trade Jeremy Grant?
I think they should. I think where they are, you know, with Sadiq Bey and that group, you know, I think he's kind of your forward of the future here. Grant is out with an injury. If you don't do anything now, then he basically goes into a walk year on an expiring. I think he's got 2 years left. I think that has a little more value. So I do think I think is probably his value. I think his value was a lot higher last trade deadline. I mean, last trade deadline, he was, you know, basically he was playing like an all-star level, has not played as well this year. So yeah, I do believe just because you're in a position where there's not many sellers, right? So you've got something that a lot of teams want, and I think you can probably maximize it more now compared to the offseason.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
So, where do you think Jerami Grant might go if indeed the Pistons come to that conclusion?
Well, I think he would help the Lakers, you know, certainly.
Well, yes.
look, the last time Jerami Grant was on a winning team was in Denver, and he played so well in that role that when he left, and I think the Nuggets were surprised that he left because they were just like, wait a minute, you know, we had a good thing going here. We loved having you, but Jerami wanted a bigger role. He wanted to be the guy on another team. That's why he went to Detroit. And then, you know, obviously he had just injuries and they're rebuilding
the
his.
He was.
Yeah. But he hasn't been around that much. I mean, it feels like he's always hurt or there's always something going on. But I mean, like the Nuggets loved him so much and missed him so much. That's part of the reason I think they went out and got Aaron Gordon, you know? And so if Jerami Grant is willing to kind of go back to a contender and be a role player again, there's so many things he can help with. I mean, what he helped the Nuggets so much was with that energy, his versatility, his defense, his offense was even pretty good at times because obviously Jokic opened up so many things for him. You know, I don't think he solves everything, the issues that the Lakers have, but certainly he's a guy that the Lakers need, another guy who's got length, who's got athleticism, who can defend, who's going to be an energy player, all the things that Magic Johnson wanted to see the other night.
Bobby, I don't think the Lakers are legitimately in the running. Who is in the running, do you think?
I mean, I think Utah would love to have him, but I don't see as you say, like you got to buy to sell. So like Joe Ingles, you know, Bogdanovic, Royce O'Neal, those are your kind of mix of guys there. They've got draft picks that are going out in multiple different deals, one to Memphis, and they've got one to Oklahoma City. So I think the earliest they can trade one is in like 26. I had in the trade guide, I had Memphis down.
Yeah.
You know, just because
that one was interesting.
Yeah. Just because the Grizzlies, I think Memphis is a great story. And they're a top four team. I don't think they're a championship team right now. Just because they've got so many young players, and I kind of get a little bit nervous when this game slows down, kind of, you know, besides Ja, who's going to be that next guy. And I'm not saying Jerami Grant's the next guy, but when you have expiring contracts and Kyle Anderson and Jarrett Culver.
Well, I will tell you in the trade guide, the trade that you suggested for Memphis, Kyle Anderson, Brandon Clark, Jarrett Culver, a 2022 first and a 2024 first. For Jerami Grant, Rodney Magruder, and Luke Garza. I'm sure that's to balance out the trade now that Magruder has been returned.
Yeah,
you actually put this story out. Magruder,
I think Magruder was in a piston, and then I think
he's back to back to being a piston.
And the picks that, you know, the 22 pick is a first from, I think that's the first from Utah, and then 24 is Golden State, is the Iguodala one, I want to say. So the first aren't yours, so it might be a little rich. So certainly when you get Clark and Anderson, but man, I mean, Memphis, they check all the boxes as far as what you have: expiring contracts, young players, draft picks, your own, other teams, to go out and do a deal if they want to, and it wouldn't deplete them, you know, as much as maybe another team would.
That would be a hell of a deal for the Pistons. I mean, two first round picks. You know, the one thing I would say from Detroit's standpoint is that it is hard for a team like Detroit to find someone who wants to be there and wants to play there and who came there. So, you know, from that standpoint, that would be difficult. That's a hard trade to turn down if you're getting that many young players and two first round picks.
Yeah.
He's extension
eligible.
You get him and, you know, you'll wait your 6 months. He's out, you know, 4 years, 113 is the max you can offer him an extension going into a walk year. So,
yeah, you know, Memphis loves to draft, and they have potentially three picks in this draft, I believe. But if you go to take the next level, you know, I don't know if you need more prospects. So that was a very interesting one to me. Before we go, Bobby, because Ohm brought up the Lakers. If you were the Rockets and you had John Wall and there was a call about trading Westbrook for Wall, and I don't think that Westbrook would play for the Rockets again. I think they would release him, either buy him out or just waive him. What would you require? Because their salaries are roughly the same. Mm-hmm. They're owed $47 million next year, right? It's almost the, am I right in saying it's almost a wash.
Salary? Yeah.
So the money is a wash. You're not planning on playing John Wall. So there's really no difference between not paying John Wall and not paying Russell Westbrook. You're just not really interested in helping the Lakers, right? So what would you require if you were Raphael Stone and Rob Pelinka called you with this concept? Not that I necessarily think that everything will be solved with the Lakers had John Wall, but he's the more type of point guard the Lakers need right now as opposed to Russ, I think. I think it might be a slight change that would help them. What would you ask for?
2027 first, protected top two that rolls over to unprotected in 2028.
I don't think the Lakers would do it. I don't think they'd do it.
There's not much left, Brian, in the kitty.
I mean, the Lakers have a couple of second round picks. Yeah. Would you do it for like 2 seconds?
I probably would consider. I mean, just because, as you said, like you're not, it's like Wall's just sitting there, right? It's not like you're playing him. So you're basically just swapping a headache for a headache. And John hasn't been really a headache, but then you got to figure out, all right, what's the buyout going to be for Westbrook as far as, you know, would they even entertain a buyout before March 1st? And how much is Russ willing to give back?
Can you take what would it take to take like a Talen Horton Tucker in that deal too?
Yeah, you have to probably, you know, he's at right around 10, right? So you got to add a little bit more. It would save the Lakers tax from the tax standpoint. Maybe is there like a David Nwaba out there, like a $4 to $5 million guy that just to kind of make the money work? It would save them a ton.
What if they gave Kendrick Nunn, Talen Horton Tucker, and Russell Westbrook and 2 second round picks for John Wall and Eric Gordon?
Whew. I mean, if I were the Lakers, I'd do that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so for Houston's perspective is that, you know, you get Horton Tucker, 2 second round picks, but what could you get Gordon in a separate deal?
Yeah.
Right. Like that's kind of like the, like, could you get him to somewhere for a future one or something else? So like I would probably want to separate Gordon and Wall together.
Right. But you're getting Horton Tucker, who you would sort of see as, you know, that compensation.
Yeah.
Tucker and Nunn. Nunn's got a player option for next year. So I don't see what it was kind of like, you know, Wall and Westbrook. There was really no trade except for the one for each other.
Right. There's not many bad $40 million contracts left out there.
And the situation has only worsened. So now they could get traded for each other again. Because again, the two teams who were involved realized that it makes more sense to this is the best option. So it's wild to think that that could happen, but I mean, I don't, and I haven't heard, just to be clear, I haven't heard any of that at all, but I don't see the other avenue if the Lakers want to do something there. And of course it's worth pointing out that John Wall's represented by Rich Paul. But I can't see it straight up unless Westbrook sent some sort of message that he would be willing to give back significant money so that he could get bought out and go be a free agent and go somewhere else. And then you could save money. But if I was Westbrook, I wouldn't do that. So
can you imagine Russ on the free agent market in early March? That'd be interesting.
Well, you know, it was interesting. I thought it was very telling. Sam Amick from The Athletic did an interview with Russ. You know, he's obviously not been playing well. And he asked him about how it was going. And, he talked about how, well, you know, it's been great to be around my family. And I'm sure that's true. I'm sure he loves being in LA, but like, you know, in a professional setting, that's not the answer you want. You know, you don't want to, you know, I hope you're, you know, everybody wants a good work-life balance, but like coming to LA was not supposed to necessarily be about being happy with your family living situation first. He will retire and be able to live the rest of his life in Los Angeles. So, you know, I appreciate Russ's honesty, but it was like sobering to say, well, how's your Laker experience going? Well, I got to be in LA on Christmas, you know, it was just like, wow. So, I don't know. I was just talking with somebody about that the other day, like what could be done? And I just couldn't find another one, Bobby. So, but I think Gordon would probably be more feasible if they just did a Gordon trade, which would probably have to be built around Horton Tucker. But then again, if the Rockets decided to trade Gordon, you know, I think the Cavs would be in there, possibly. But you'd have to be competing with the other offers if that was just for Gordon. So, all right, Bobby and Olm, thank you so much for being here. Thank you, listen to Collective. Thanks to Jackson, our producer. We will talk to you guys later in the week.